15 to 20 million.
General, I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860. As you know, we serve the entire Philadelphia and tri-state area. And as always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in on 860 AM. If they live outside of our broadcast market, give them a call and invite them to tune in to the front page of American Workers Radio and click on the Listen Live link. Well, I have a special day coming up. We're going to have a very important guest with us today. But before I welcome our panel and our special guest, I want to ask all of you to help us promote November as American Made Month. That link is now on the front page of American Workers Radio, or you can go direct to AmericanMadeMonth.com. Well, as you know, back in August, I mentioned that I was waiting till after the conventions, and I reached out to the campaigns of both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump to welcome them to come on our broadcast or permit a close advisor to be our guest on the radio. Well, I did receive a response from the Trump campaign, and they told me to contact them with a few dates and times. When I talked it over, we decided that we'll give both sides a chance after the Labor Day holiday to consider when they can come on. And as you remember, last Wednesday during our October 19th broadcast, I reached out again, even on air, to welcome Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's campaign to be part of our Wednesday broadcast. Well, today I'm very pleased that we have an official representative of the Donald Trump campaign. He's a distinguished man. His name is Mr. Curtis Ellis. He's the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance, and he's worked in Congress on campaigns, in journalism. He is a writer and producer for CNN, ABC, NBC News, Associated Press, 60 Minutes, and Time Magazine. His commentaries have appeared regularly on TV, radio, in print, and online. I've never met Mr. Ellis personally, but I've seen him on television and on the internet and rebroadcast, so I know exactly what he's all about, and I'm really honored to welcome him to be with us on air. Mr. Ellis, before I do officially welcome you, I want to introduce you to our on-air panel, and they include Rich Logis. He's a fellow journalist and also a businessman and a very opinionated person who's on our weekly show. Larkin Connolly is also a businessman and now the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, which does an enormous job helping people looking to go into business. And Mark Andel is a businessman and the founder of the Made in America store in Elma, New York. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, the very best. I'm Michael Blihash, a radio broadcaster for 30 years. And during the last 19 years, I've been promoting American Workers Need You and founded the American Workers Radio program back in January of 2011 because we were really, you know, in need of jobs very badly. But first, I would like to welcome Mr. Ellis and have him then speak with our panel members. Welcome, Mr. Ellis.
It's a great privilege to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so impressed by the work you do and the work the rest of your panel does. I have been to Mark Andel's store. I can't say that I'm familiar with Rich Logis and Larkin Connolly, but I'm sure they do terrific work. And thank you for having me.
Very nice. Very proud to welcome you because your work and your opinions are very important, especially your participation with the American Jobs Alliance, which I hope you'll be telling us more about during the broadcast. You know, we promote so much in this country. We're trying to get America back to no less than 50% of everything that is sold in America being made in America again. It's been a challenge because so many of our jobs were taken out of the country over the years by Pied Pipers who just decided we'll slowly do it. And the American people really just bought the products as usual. And we all know political issues are always important to discuss, but influencing people to support one another and the jobs of their fellow Americans is extremely important. Now, Mr. Ellis, I know that you are an important part of the American Jobs Alliance. Can you tell us what you think is your most important mission there?
Well, the most important mission is to have people understand the American system of economics, which was founded by Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, pursued by such great Americans as Abraham Lincoln. The idea that we are better off when we make more of what we buy and buy more of what we make. In his report to the manufacturers as Secretary of the Treasury under George Washington, Alexander Hamilton made it very clear that in order to have a truly free and independent nation, we must be producing the manufactured goods that we consume. We cannot be reliant on foreign countries for our manufactured goods. That was true in 1789, and it's true today in 2016. At that time, Great Britain was the great producer of manufactured goods, everything from textiles to iron goods. Now, China and other countries are producing the goods that we depend on, that we use. Just as recently as, say, 1990, Americans were making most of the goods that Americans bought and used in their everyday lives, whether it's kitchen appliances or automobiles or so many of the things that we rely on in our lives were being made by Americans. And the workforce participation rate was much higher and the unemployment rate was much lower. But then, as you put it so eloquently, the Pied Pipers of globalism told Americans and told our policymakers that we didn't need to do this anymore. These were like these jobs in making steel and making manufactured goods gone the way of the buggy whip, and we can just let those jobs go overseas, and somehow magically new jobs will appear to take the place and employ the hands of the Americans, which are now idled because their jobs have been sent to China and places like that. Well, we see that that didn't happen. We need to make steel. We need to make plastics. We need to make the things that we use every day. That will put Americans back to work. That will solve the deficit problem that we see at the local, state, and federal level. Because people who don't have jobs or people who have only minimum wage jobs and businesses that have gone bankrupt do not pay taxes. That is the reason why we have deficits. When we put Americans back to work, making the things that we consume, producing the goods that we need and use every day to have a first world lifestyle, then these people will be paying taxes and replenishing the Social Security Trust Fund, the Medicare Trust Fund, the General Treasury at the city level, at the state level, and at the federal level. That's how we balance the budget without raising taxes, without cutting necessary services. Of course, we still have to get rid of waste and fraud and abuse, but that's another story, and we'll leave that for another broadcast. We've had decades of a failed experiment in radical globalism, which essentially erases the borders of the United States, says there is no such thing as a national economy. Every other country on earth, whether it's China or the European Union or Mexico, is concerned about building up their nation's economy. So it's a one-way street. And to those who say that standing up for American workers and standing up for American businesses and American producers is going to cause a trade war if we crack down on the mercantilist policies of China, which subsidizes their industries and which places tariffs on American products entering and subsidizes their exports and manipulates their currency to deliberately undersell American producers. They say if we stand up to that, we're going to ignite a trade war. I say we're already in a trade war, and what we have done amounts to unilateral disarmament. So the most important thing that we can do at the American Jobs Alliance is to rekindle in the American consciousness the idea of a national economy, that we must be strong as a nation. Our economy, the first thing we need to be doing, our policymakers in Washington, when we use our wallets as well as our ballots, the most important thing we need to do is understand there is such a thing as a national economy of the United States, and we must put the interests of the American working people first in all of our government policies.
You're absolutely right, and I only want to add to that. Foreign workers don't pay taxes in America, nor do foreign governments. So when you look at the labels, ladies and gentlemen, go shopping, please look at the labels and make sure you purchase as much American-made as possible so that what Mr. Ellis just said is the way things will turn around in this country. We have to start looking out for one another. Mark is the founder of the American-made store, and I want to tell you something. He's going to tell you a little bit about his efforts and what he's doing there at the Made in America store. Mark.
How you doing, Mr. Ellis? Nice to meet you. Thank you for being on our show. And you had said you would stop at my store in Elma, New York.
I have. I've done a lot of work in Buffalo. It's okay. A great store you have there. I've worked with a great American in the Buffalo area. His name is Jack Davis. He's the founder and president of I Squared R Element Company. He has probably some of the last industrial furnaces in Western New York. And he's a great patriot. He believes in what you're doing. He believes in everything that we've been talking about. So spent a lot of time in Buffalo, and I had to make the pilgrimage to your store. It's
excellent. Could I ask
store.
When you were up here?
This was probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I stopped by your store.
Everything you've talked about on the opening statements is what I believe in, and we have to produce more than we can consume as a nation. I don't know how we got, I call it a 35-40-year mistake. I'm not sure how we got this far off.
Let me take this opportunity to remind all of you to please help us support American Made Month, which begins on November the 1st. If you go to the internet site and click on the site, you'll see a whole month worth of ideas that we'll be sharing with everybody, and your participation going out and talking to the various people will certainly help us when you go to the stores. Speaking up will certainly be a way that we'll be able to spread the message. That's what it's really all about. Friday, November the 4th, Saturday the 5th, and Sunday the 6th, we're going to ask all of you to support National Small Business Weekend, which is always held the first weekend of every month. And then the big day is November the 8th, which is National Election Day, an opportunity to go out and vote for the people who you feel will best represent your government, your local community, and help people stay employed. And then on November the 11th, we'll be honoring Veterans Day. It'll be a time to honor veterans and promote the jobs that the American veterans depend on and all Americans are depending on. And then, as time goes on, we're going to ask you to go out of your way to shop at stores throughout the month and let storekeepers know that you're looking to buy holiday gifts for family members and friends. And then on November the 24th, that's Thanksgiving time. It's a great time to talk to family members and friends and, of course, make sure that they know about the Buy American Made campaign and American Workers Radio. And as always, on Friday, November the 25th, it's Black Friday. And that's a time for us to focus on American-made everything possible so American-made businesses will benefit. That's a very important project. And then on Saturday, the 26th of November, we have Small Business Saturday, a national event to support America's small businesses and another opportunity to seek out products that are made in America. We have a whole event. I wish that more of our broadcasters, more of our people in the elected offices would take these ideas and run with them, because I'm pleased to say that Senator Sabatino will once again be introducing the resolution in the state Senate of Pennsylvania. We also have some people who are going to be doing that in other cities across the USA. But the most important person for you to influence is the person who owns the store or manages the store where you shop, because that person goes out of their way to look into the inventory, talk to the merchandisers, and the more they hear from people that people are concerned that they are going to have more business, if they focus on American-made products, the better it will be. You know, Mr. Ellis, when young people go out with their parents, say, shopping for school supplies, you were absolutely right. In the 90s, when my kids were in school, everything was made in America. Their school uniforms were made in the Philadelphia area. Today, you order the uniforms and it comes from some foreign country. That's ridiculous. That's a bad example for the boys and girls to see that everything that's on their bodies, everything they watch, televisions, use their cell phones, and shoes and clothing, you name it, is all foreign made. Where is the workmanship and the skills of the American worker?
Well, that's the thing. Where is the workmanship and the skills of the American worker? What kind of example? It sets a bad example at many levels, and it's bad policy at so many levels. After the Democratic convention, Hillary Clinton and her running mate got on a bus across Pennsylvania. They stopped at Kenex, K-N-E-X, a toy manufacturer. They do plastic injection molding, and they make toys, Tinker Toys, and some other products there. And she said, these are the jobs of the future. They need welders. They need coating specialists. They need all kinds of mold makers. These are the jobs of the future, she said. Well, in fact, those are the jobs that used to be done in America, that used to be done in Pennsylvania, that used to be done in the Philadelphia area. But they were all outsourced under the Clinton NAFTA plan and under the Clinton Make It in China plan, which they enacted the last time they were in office. So it was just a horrible show of hypocrisy or amnesia for her to be saying these jobs as welders and the skilled trades in manufacturing are the jobs of the future. Those are the very jobs that the Clintons destroyed under the false banner of globalism, that we don't need to do these things anymore. We absolutely need to do these things.
And, you know, you're right. And I want to add something to that, because I go around to many events and people are saying to me, Michael, we're all expected to be great Americans and great taxpayers. But with so many of the jobs leaving America or left America with no jobs to replace them, how are we going to be these great Americans and taxpaying Americans?
Well, that's right. And the other bad, if you don't have a job, you don't pay taxes. If you're working minimum wage as a Walmart greeter, you're not paying much into the Social Security Trust Fund. That explains why the Social Security is going broke. You've got Hillary Clinton saying she's ready to raise the retirement age in order to make Social Security solvent. Well, I'll tell you what, if you're working in physical labor, as many Americans are, and there's nothing wrong with that, you don't want to be working until you're 70 years old. You can't. Sure, if you're working as a lawyer, if you're working in one of the jobs that the Clinton family has as, you know, pushing paper at a foundation somewhere, oh, yeah, fine, I can work till I'm 75. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Well, that's not the reality for most Americans, and they're just out of touch. Donald Trump understands what it takes to make America great again, to put America working again, and to make America solvent again. It is to bring jobs back to this country. That goes back to the other fallacy of this make everything in China business and make school uniforms somewhere else. It sends, on one level, it sends this message that we don't need to make anything here. And on another level, it sends a message to kids that there's something wrong with working. And there's nothing wrong with working. In fact, work is what makes you free. Work is what gives you fulfillment in life. It's not the things you buy with your paycheck that fulfill you. It's the work you do that is supposed to make you happy and does make most people happy. There's nothing to be looked down on work. Work is something to be striving for. And then the other thing is that, as you said, it used to be when we bought the back-to-school uniforms and the back-to-school supplies, they were made in America. And this goes to what went wrong with the stimulus program that Obama put in place when he took office in the very early days of this Great Recession. In the old days, when government started spending money on things, all of the money flowed within the United States. If the government gave people a welfare check even, and the people went out and bought a coat
for their children to go back to school in the cold weather of autumn. That coat was made, probably sewn, in Philadelphia or Rochester, New York, or in Chinatown in Manhattan in the garment district. It was made out of textiles that were manufactured in North Carolina or South Carolina. So the money, not only, you weren't just putting money in the pocket of the recipient of the welfare check, you were putting money in the pocket of the textile worker in South Carolina and in the garment worker in Rochester, New York. Now, when we're buying textiles made in China that are being sewn in Malaysia, when we buy that coat, we're not employing Americans the way we used to. And the textiles, by the way, were made from cotton grown in Texas. So you were employing five different levels of Americans. But now that we've outsourced our garment industry, our textile industry, and we've got free-flowing imports from around the world for raw materials like cotton and wool, you're not employing any Americans. And so what happened with that stimulus program is all the money, instead of in the old days, it used to be called pump priming. Government spending was pump priming. You would put some water in the pump to prime it and get it going again. Now it's a sieve. When the government spends its stimulus money, half of it leaks out and goes overseas because all of our industries and all of our productive assets are gone.
I'll tell you, Mr. Ellis, 20 years ago, most people didn't understand how the loss of the tens of thousands of industries were going to affect America. When they started to go to foreign countries, people said, well, we'll have other jobs, newer jobs. But this is the big point. Instead of national elected leaders enacting ways to keep the businesses here, they enacted government taxpayer social programs to really hide the fact that so many Americans were being unemployed.
That's right. That's exactly right. The Obama administration has proposed, and the Clinton administration, the would-be Clinton administration, has endorsed this idea of something called wage insurance. Now, we all know what unemployment insurance is. You're out of work, you get laid off, and while you're looking for the next job, you can collect some money to keep paying the bills until you get another job. Well, now they've come up with this idea called wage insurance, and all of the promoters of this Trans-Pacific Partnership and these free trade deals, they all openly say, well, we need wage insurance, because they understand that when Americans who have had their jobs taken away and sent to Malaysia or Vietnam or China, when they get reemployed, the wages aren't as good. The next job they get is going to be a worse job. It's going to be at Walmart. It's going to be in retail. It's going to be something that doesn't pay as well as the last job. So the government now is going to give you a check to make up the difference of what you used to earn and what you earn now at the new worst job. This is horrifying. This is just a frightening realization that the economic plans that the one party has for us is a low-wage economy that, in order to survive, you're going to be dependent on a government check. And this is just wrong. And Donald Trump says we don't have to accept that. We can have steel made in America again. We can crack down on the illegal dumping of steel by foreign producers into our market, which then bankrupts. It bankrupted 38 steel companies in America. 38 American steel companies went into bankruptcy as a result of foreign steel being sold in America at below market prices. Every other country on earth protects their steel market and does not allow cheap imports to come in, or even fairly priced imports to come into the market, but not the United States. We've been slow to respond, even when we know there's cheating going on. We've been so slow to respond, and when by the time the case gets settled, even if we win in court, the damage has been done, and the companies have been bankrupted.
And the people are unemployed. And the people are unemployed with no way to go to another job because they're slowly, the things around that particular producer, whether it's the coffee shop or the suppliers, have dried up.
Exactly right.
Mr. Ellis,
exactly.
I'm going to ask you to go back to Mark Andel, who, as I mentioned, is the founder of the Made in America store.
Yeah. How you doing, Mr. Ellis? I love what you're saying, and boy, are you, you're dead on, you're point on. Again, you said you were up to my store about 3-4 years ago. Just to give you a little update, we're up to 7,000 products made in our country and support 486 privately owned American businesses at this point. We have 7 brick-and-mortar stores in Western New York, 4 store-in stores where we're joining stores and putting a little designated area in a store, and a message on top is consumers creating jobs with every purchase. And then we also have our websites. But, you know, out of my 7,000 products, we're almost at 600 tour buses to visit the little town of Elma at this point. And, again, I own my steel companies, General Welding and Fabricating. I had 4 plants. I now have 2. You know, back in 2007, 2008, 2009, I was hit by China directly. I lost half my business on a post I had made, and I found out my little taste of globalization. So everything that you say is just point on. I want to say I don't have one product that plugs in. And that's sad in America. Not one, you know, electronic item do I have that we can sell that either plugs in or takes a battery. On the show, I'm always joking, we don't make a toaster no more. I tell people we've been to the moon, that little white spot we got to, so you can't tell me we don't have the technology or the, you know, the gumption. But what you're talking about is so point on, but so many people just don't know how we get this out of balance. In my store, to me, I want to be the flag of America. You know, and again, we meet buses and people, and everybody that comes in my store understands. We try to be consistent with our message. We try to educate and raise awareness. They cannot believe how out of balance we've gotten. And on this show, we talk about the supply chains are gone and whatnot, but we have to start today. It's actually unsafe. We couldn't produce in war times. We couldn't produce any products on our own. It's a threat to national security, too. We don't produce electronics or anything in this country. So I just want to compliment you on your mission, and just your message today is just so point on. You could be part of our team tomorrow, but you'd definitely have my vote.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you for what you're doing. And you're doing an invaluable service to our country. I'd love to be part of your team. You know, you're right. You say buses come there, busloads of people come. They understand, but people understand. That's why the Trump campaign is more than a campaign. It's become a movement. We very early on started, even before Mr. Trump announced, he was on the air talking about these bad trade deals and how we're losing jobs, losing industries, losing the skills we need to feed ourselves, to clothe ourselves, to defend ourselves. If you had an individual, a person, who could not clothe themselves or feed themselves, you'd call that person an invalid. Well, that's what we're becoming on a national level. We don't produce the clothing we need. We don't produce the food we eat. We don't produce the goods we need that we depend on for our lifestyle. We are dependent, in a way, on handouts from other nations because we're borrowing the money we then use to buy the goods that we used to make ourselves. We used to be an independent, strong, self-reliant nation. Now, nobody's talking about cutting ourselves off from the whole world and, you know, just holding up and saying bye-bye. But you know what? We've got the energy here, the energy resources. We have the raw materials. We have the people. We can do like we used to do just 25 years ago. A very small percentage of the goods that we bought in the stores were made elsewhere. Most of them were made here in America. I love what you say about, I hate what you say about we don't have anything that plugs into the wall that's made in America. They used to make Zenith television sets in Batavia, New York.
Yeah.
There used to be a factory that made television sets, that made the picture tubes, that made everything right there in Batavia, New York, probably not more than an hour and a half drive from your store.
And Mr. Ellis, I want to tell you a couple of things I've got to get you is our All-American, the American-made movie, which was by 2 philanthropists out of Georgia, invested $4 million. But it's a movie that shows where we were after World War II. It shows where we are today. It's non-political, but it shows globalization. But it shows how we've lost that can-do spirit, and I was blessed to be part of it, that entrepreneur spirit that never quits. But when you talk about skilled trades, I own General Welding and Fabricating, so I've got a plant in Buffalo and a plant in Rochester. I used to have 4, but I have 2. too. We run 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, seven if we need to. This is the toughest economy I probably faced in my 30 years, and I don't hear it on TV, which bothers me because I'm in the game. Most are in the arena. We're in the oil and mining industry, the juice plant industry, and all these industries got hit. But when you talk about you can't find a worker, when this economy pops back, if it does, when it does, we cannot find employees. My students, my young kids, they don't even know how to hold a hammer, let alone a screwdriver. And I blame the parents and the guidance counselors for washing it out of the school and making it like doing drugs. You want to work with your hands. We have such a need and such a skilled trade shortage. I work with Alfred College and the schools. We try to tie and train and bring this back. But, you know, what you're on, this is such a big movement because people just don't know how out of shape we are on the job, skilled trade job shortage. It's incredible. My favorite T-shirt, and I'd love to get you one, it says Made in America Store on the front, but it says in the back, because China's a long drive to work. We have a lot of fun with that shirt.
I remember that T-shirt. I remember that is the greatest. That is the
it's
greatest.
It's still our number one.
At your store. That really says it. You know, Mark, and I'd love to be – let's please be in touch after the show. I mean, this is – what you're doing is just too important. It's great, and I want to be part of it, even after Mr. Trump wins on November 8th. And, you know, I was talking to Ameritech Dyne Mold down in North Carolina. They're a plastic injection molding outfit. They make the steel molds that are used to make the plastic parts that go into automobiles, that go into a lot of things. And somebody can go with a high school education if they're, you know, have good math skills, basic math skills. They can get an apprenticeship there as a mold maker. And they can be earning money while they learn a highly skilled trade. And at the end of it, and they're probably earning $40,000 a year as an apprentice mold maker in this guy's shop. He supplies, you know, BMW and all the auto plants down south with dashboards and fenders and all kinds of plastic parts. A lot of cars are made out of plastic now. And at the end of their apprenticeship, they're going to be earning $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year, and without any college debt. I mean, so these are jobs that are essential, and we've denigrated this kind of work. Exactly what you say. It is wrong. We've denigrated this kind of work. Everybody thinks they're going to be a basketball player or a singer or a lawyer. I tell you what, I write. I write a lot, and I work. I enjoy hanging a shelf. I know how to use a hammer and a screwdriver. I used to work on cars. Yeah, I find some fulfillment in doing that as well. I mean, you know, our father's mansion has many rooms, and we have to allow everybody to have a shot and have an economy that employs people of all different skills. There's nothing wrong with anything that you do. As long as you love doing it, you're ahead of the game.
Mr. Ellis, I'd like to introduce you to another member of our panel, Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and also another journalist. Rich.
Curtis, good morning, everyone. Curtis, thank you so much for being here. Yes, I'm a former journalist many years ago for Gannett. I spent some time last night looking at your columns. You had one last week, President of the World, no thanks. I encourage our listeners to go and look that up, WND.com, not WMD, WND.com, President of the World. Mr. Ellis, I have a comment and a question for you. My comment is our mainstream media has proven itself to be a collective bastion of transparency, credibility, and objectivity this election, as we've seen so well. I mean, you always ask your sources if they approve of the story, don't you? Don't you always give campaign advice as an objective journalist and say, hey, you did great last night? I know as a journalist I never did that stuff. I actually never cared what the people wanted. I cared about the facts, the who, what, when, where, why. So our media has shown its sort of Goebbelsian Pravda colors. That's my comment. If you agree or disagree, it's fine. But my question for you regarding the media and tied into what you're talking about is this. Do you think the mainstream media has suppressed the fact that Donald Trump's candidacy is as much a rebellion against the Republicans as it is the Democrats?
Oh, they certainly have. They want to keep people, I'm not saying like a conspiracy theory, but it's just the mindset of many of the journalists. They're still locked in this Democrats versus Republicans. And they have really obscured the fact that many of the positions that Donald Trump has taken and takes are very different from traditional positions of either party. His opposition to globalism, look, there's plenty of evidence out there, and there's plenty of statements from Paul Ryan, the highest-ranking elected Republican in the country right now. He's a globalist. He's in favor of these free trade deals. He's in favor of open borders. Donald Trump's against all that. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which really is not, it's the multinational Chamber of Commerce. They do not represent American businesses. They represent global businesses that are American in name only. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce supports the Republican Party candidates, except for Mr. Trump, and they have a long record of that. So, yes, and if you look at the positions Mr. Trump has taken, get big money out of politics. These politicians are bought and paid for puppets. Get us out of nation building around the world and looking for wars and regime change in every corner of the earth. Let's rebuild our country. Let's get out of these free trade deals that have been disastrous for American working people and American businesses. These are not traditional Republican Party business positions. You have to go back to the 1900s to find Republican Party position that supported, that were in line with this. So, yeah, they've obscured that fact. So they're trying to get, you know, drive the people, you've got to support the Democratic Party, whereas the Democratic Party has been supporting these trade deals, is responsible for these military adventures that have just bled our country dry and literally bled our people. So they've obscured a lot of things. The media has been unmasked as being a biased, one-sided, thumb on the scale advocate for one of the candidates in this election, and that candidate is not Donald Trump.
Curtis, let me ask you this. Thank you. One last question before we get to Larkin. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong about this. I actually believe this is going to be our era's, our generation's Dewey defeats Truman moment in 13 days. That's what I believe is going to happen. And in my opinion, if you disagree, please let us know why. I actually think that the Republican Party is going to sweat more bullets when Donald Trump's elected than even the Democrats will.
Well, let's put it this way. There is a bipartisan class of experts and apparatchiks. They inhabit the think tanks. They inhabit the media. They inhabit the consultant class and the lobbyists. These people, they have an R or a D next to their name, but really they're part of the same interest group. And Donald Trump is against the insiders. It is a rigged system in Washington that works to perpetuate its own interests. And there's only one man who will break that up, who can break that up because he's not part of it, and that is Donald Trump. So there are many people who would sleep easier at night knowing that they had their wired in, set up job in Washington. Doesn't matter who's president, as long as they have their iron rice bowl paid for by the American taxpayers and the special globalist interests who are shipping our jobs overseas, opening our borders, erasing our borders, replacing working Americans with poorly paid foreign labor. That's who is paying for this apparatus class, the commissars of the parties and the apparatchiks that are inhabiting, that have infested Washington. And yeah, yes, to what you said.
Mr. Ellis, I want you to be introduced to another very distinguished person who's also a longtime businessman and who is now the East Coast Vice President of SCORE. His name is Larkin Connolly. Larkin.
Hey, thank you, Michael, for those kind words. None of them are true, but they're kind. Curtis, good morning. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Good morning. Thank you.
I like Rich enjoyed sitting up last night reading a lot of your material, and you truly are spot on. SCORE is an initiative, a national initiative. We have 325 chapters, 11,000 volunteers, and we counsel. We help small businesses start and grow. We have the purest agenda of anybody out there because we don't start a clock. We don't charge a penny for what we do. We're hell-bent on making the American dream come true for everybody in a small business environment. But let me ask you a question. I'll make a comment, and everybody will laugh because they know I'm going to say it. I've been saying it powerfully for the last 2 months. I think somebody ought to pass a law immediately making polling illegal. I think it is the cheapest and most out-of-control way of affecting the electorate that I've ever seen. And anytime you can keep a poll open and making comments about the election in New York when the people in California haven't had their polls closed yet, that's just one way that I think they negatively affect any and every election. Allow me to ask you a question. You know, in the U.S., which we study very carefully, creating startup businesses is at a historical low. And I apologize if you've already answered part of this question. I was one of the people most affected by Ma Bell there and couldn't get on. But how do we turn that around? I mean, we've just taken the starch out of our sails. Nobody wakes up in the morning and goes, you know what, I think I'll start a small business. I think I'll go out and make a difference.
That is a great question. I'm glad you asked. Donald Trump has put forward a plan to reinvigorate our economy, to get the juice back in the economy. And an important part of that plan, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I knew that we have a record low small business startup right now, and that is terrible. The Trump plan calls for cutting business taxes. Now, it's tax cuts for everybody, but let's just focus on the small business. Right now, small businesses, and the corporation tax is 35%. And if you have a small business as a S corporation or an LLC, you're paying 35%. He says cut that to 15%. Who is paying that 35%? Tax rate. It's not the big multinational companies. It's not General Electric. It's not Apple. It's not Facebook. They have battalions of lawyers. They find a way to not pay any taxes whatsoever. It's the small guy. It's the person with the HVAC shop who's got a couple of trucks on the road fixing people's air conditioners in the summer, fixing their furnaces in the winter. Those are the people that are paying the 35%. So we cut that to 15%. That'll put more money into that can be reinvested in business, hire more people. The other thing, a very important part, is, and there's two other parts that speak to this, is regulatory burden. Get rid of unneeded regulations and paperwork. Just last year, as part of the, this is crazy, but it's just unbelievable. As part of the fight over giving President Obama fast-track trade promotion authority to basically shove this Trans-Pacific Partnership through, they, as part of that deal, they said, well, we're going to retrain the people who are inevitably going to have their jobs taken away. So here they are, I mean, on one level of nuts. We're going to have a trade deal that's going to unemploy Americans, but what we're going to do is we're going to retrain them. And how are we going to pay for that retraining? We are going to raise the taxes on small businesses. I am not making this up. They doubled and tripled the penalties for people who misfile or forget to file a 1099. And who is doing that? It's, again, the small business who hires independent contractors. If you forget to file paperwork, you get to pay double the fine. Double the penalty. So this is, we've got to get rid of these regulations that hit the small businesses disproportionately. Because again, the big corporations, the giant combines and conglomerates, they've got the lawyers. It's not hard for them to fill up. They've got the lawyers and the accountants and the all of the battalions of paper pushers to meet these regulations. And the regulations are usually written by them in order to keep down the small business and to erect barriers of entry to the marketplace so that they can protect their market share and quash small businesses from starting up in the first place. We're going to reverse that. I know it sounds weird to think of it, but it's not. Think of it for a moment. In a way, Donald Trump is a small businessman. He is, I know he's a billionaire, and he's got this, I'm standing in his tower on Fifth Avenue, but this, compared to the giant global corporations with factories around the world, invested in China, invested in India, invested in Mexico and elsewhere, Donald Trump's a small businessman. It's a family-owned business here. But that, I digress. The point is, we can get rid of the unnecessary regulations that are strangling small businesses, cut the taxes, which are a deterrent and a drag on the job creation done by small businesses. And then the other part of it is, and this is specific, the energy sector. A lot of the energy sector are independent businesses, and there's a lot of regulation there that is not needed, and there's this big plan called the climate change plan to basically phase out not just coal, but oil and gas as well. And that's just unrealistic, and they're trying unproven technologies. It reminds me of, don't worry, we're going to take your job away and send it to China, but a new job's going to come along, so don't worry about it. Now they're saying, we're going to take your energy away, but don't worry about it, there's going to be some new energy to replace it. Well, we saw what happened with the jobs. Never came, never happened. People are living on peanuts. And now they're going to take away our energy, and they say, don't worry about it. Something new is going to come along. It's going to be just like those jobs. We'll be living in the cold and dark waiting for that new energy to come someday.
Curtis, can I make a point? It's Rich here again. And in fairness, I can't say whether or not Mr. Trump has said this, if he's said it a lot or just once in a while. It's not to say that Republicans in the past haven't liked big government. You know, George W. Bush liked them or not. He was a big spender, right? But the fact of the matter is, these multinationalists, the globalists, the gazillionaires you're talking about, they love Democrats because they love big government. They always have. Part of the base of the Democratic Party are the gazillionaires. Gazillionaires win no matter what, but they just win a little more with Democrats. You know, it's like the old saying, all men are created equal, but some are created more equal than others. And the reality of this fact is that, no, but that's, you know, this is really what it is. But yet, you know, again, we talked about the media. So why is it that half of our population believes the opposite? I'm not suggesting that the mega affluent of our country don't play both sides sometimes and that the Republicans don't have part of that. And by the way, I'm an independent, okay? If you listen to the show enough, you know that I'm happy to as much to talk about Paul Ryan as I am Hillary Clinton. But let's just be honest about the facts. And the facts are that the left loves big government. Gazillionaires love big government. They always
That's
have.
Right.
The government right now is the biggest it has ever been. The gains to the very top are the largest they've ever been. Is that a coincidence, Curtis? I don't think so.
No, it's not a coincidence. And look who's at the table. When the big government writes regulations, the big corporations are at the table. When the government negotiates these so-called free trade deals, and I say so-called because they're not free and it's not trade, it's labor arbitrage, replacing Americans with cheap foreign labor. So that's not trade, that's labor arbitrage, and it's not free. It's managed. A 5,000-page deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is carving up the market for among different industry sectors and among different countries. That's not free trade. That is managed trade. So who's sitting at the table when they negotiate these deals? The big boys, the big guys. That's who's there. So, yes, big government, big corporations, they work hand in glove. They always find a way to survive. It goes right back to the very beginning of big government in the progressive era, Teddy Roosevelt and all these people. It was the House of Morgan, J.P. Morgan, the giant meat packers, the giant combine corporations that were begging the government to come in and start regulating the various industries so they could keep the small guys out, so they could get rid of the competition. They weren't able to buy out the competition. They weren't able to quash the competition by controlling all the patents because technology was too new. There were too many entrants in the field. They couldn't buy off the competition. So they turned to the government and they said, we're going to create government regulations that no one will be able to afford to comply with except us. That's the true history of big government. Big government, big business work together. And if you're not at the table writing the regulations, you're on the menu. And that's where we are. That's where the small businessman is. And that's the way it's always been.
Well, Mr. Curtis, I want to tell you something. You're going to definitely have to be part of our broadcast many, many times in the future, because what you said is the facts and the figures. And we have to influence day after day to change the hearts and minds of the American people, who are blinded by just having everything available to them with no problem. We have to, believe it or not, have some closing remarks, and I'm going to start off with Larkin.
You kind of caught me off. I was so busy listening to Curtis earlier. Listen, we have, our country faces some of the biggest challenges that we have ever been confronted with in the history of the country. There's just no question about that. And if Hillary wins, the social landscape is going to change with some pretty crazy Supreme Court picks. But even more important than that is the fact that the small business world is going to suffer, and it's going to be very difficult to survive. So we can't think that once the election is over, we're finished with our work. We're not even close to finished with our work. It's going to be to stop that Democratic machine, that Hillary machine more specifically, and represent the small business person a little bit better than we have.
Rich, thank you, Larkin. Rich, what would you like to say to our special guest?
Thank you so much. I tweeted you last night. My handle is Sovereignty is Sexy. There's a photo of my daughter screaming, crying because she didn't eat for 10 minutes. Hook up with me, please. Thank you for your work, folks. 13 days, TikTok, get in the game. Thank you.
Mark.
Yes, Mr. Ellis, just an inspiration. Thank you for your time and energy and passion. We share a similar fabric. You know, I've got 12 inspections, audits this year alone in New York, and they're helping the small business. We have to talk after the show. I have to get you a shirt and the American-made movie, but thank you for being part of our show, and look forward to future talks.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Of course, we'll be back tomorrow. Barbara will be back. And on Friday, I'll see you Saturday at 11 here on 860 AM. My special thanks to Mr. Curtis Ellis. You have been an unbelievable guest, and we look forward to having you back in the future, because you understand what it is, but we have to make more Americans understand what's happened to us. Mr. Ellis, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the very best. God bless, and make sure you're planned to go out and vote if you haven't voted already in those early voting states. We're depending on you. America needs us.